So the infrastructure needs to be everywhere, and you need to be able to assess it. Part of that is, can you plug into it? So if we got to a world where Tesla has their supercharger network for the 2 to 3 to 4% of charging sessions that happen when you're willing to drive behind a Walmart and sit next to the dumpster and charge your car, great, have that. But when you really want it to be ubiquitous, convenient, et cetera, please God, pick a connector, and that's the infrastructure we're going to provide. We want to be everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome again to another episode of Opto Sessions. Today we've got Rex Jackson on the call, CFO, Chief Financial Officer at ChargePoint, one of the world's largest networks of electric vehicle charging stations. How's it going, Rex?
Very well, thank you.
Where are you calling from today?
I'm actually in Puerto Rico today.
Oh, wow. Are you based out there or is that just...
I split time between here and California.
Oh, cool. Yeah, great again to have you on the show. Thank you for giving the time for us to have a conversation. I thought we could just start off, just if you could give us an overview of ChargePoint and explain the sort of unique value proposition you have in the marketplace, that'd be great.
Happy to do that. So if you think about EV infrastructure, it needs to be two things. It needs to be highly functional, reliable hardware, then it needs to be connected, right? It needs to be connected by software. And the reason for that is you want to control who has access, how do you want to price it, how do you schedule it, how do you reserve it when you get kicked off, et cetera. And then the other big thing is, how do you manage power? And then how do you also proactively manage it so that the infrastructure works? So what we do is we have a deeply rooted belief in four words, which are probably a mouthful, but there's ubiquity. We want to be everywhere, right? Accessibility, which is you need to be able to find it. Hence, application in the phone, everything's connected. Think of a charging infrastructure as a bunch of little cell phones sitting out there talking to a network.
Yeah.
You want to be able to find it. Once you get there, you want it to be easily usable. So payment infrastructure, tap to charge, that sort of thing. And then in the end, it's got to work. So reliability. So ubiquity, accessibility, usability, and reliability.
Can you take us through the business model? Like how do you make revenue? Like what's involved? Yeah.
So we're at the very early stage of electrification. And our business model is we look out, we go, okay, so in the US, around 2% maybe of the fleet is electric. In Europe, it's a meaningful percent, or, you know, probably 4 or 5% are electric. In some countries, it's much higher.
Wow.
So you're at the very, very early stages of this. But the bottom line is, the key word is infrastructure. This is something that has to happen. It has to be everywhere. The good news is the power is readily distributed and it's clean. It's not, you know, burying tanks underneath a gas station, which is great. But it needs to be like you would plug in your iPhone, right?
Yeah.
So you want to be able to get to charge your car much like you would charge your phone when it's convenient and when it's sitting still doing nothing, right? So our business model is not to own and operate. We don't, you know, we're not trying to make money on power. We're not trying to make money on drivers. We're not trying to make money on those ways. Where we make money is we sell hardware connected to hosts who have the footprint, and we allow them to provide a service to their customers, their employees, et cetera. And then the goal, of course, is to make money on everything that we do.
And is that a one-off fee per station, or have you got a recurring sort of revenue aspect to it?
Great question. We have both. So the key thing, I get asked a lot of times whether or not we loss lead our hardware, which we don't. Do we sell our hardware with our software? We don't do that either, right? So what we do is we put in infrastructure. We make margin on that. As a hardware company, I'd like to say we're like Cisco, but we're not yet. But you make money on your hardware, and then you make a recurring fee, to your question, from a software and support perspective.
Okay. And what exactly does the software part of it do? What helps? It helps them manage their infrastructure in some way.
Yeah. I mean, so imagine you decide to put charging in your forecourt. You could put it in your office. You could put it outside your grocery store. You could put it outside your theater, your shopping mall, et cetera. So it's like a water hose running in your parking lot, and it costs you a bunch of money. So do you want to manage who has access to it, what you charge them, how long they can park, the power that your overall infrastructure is using? Because peak power is a bad thing, right? So what we allow you to do is to slot in our infrastructure into what you're doing, control who gets it. You can put incentives around it. You can provide it for your employees if you want to. You can charge, much like Wi-Fi, if you're a hotel, you can charge a fee for it, those sorts of things. So it's all about access management, power management, and then the thing I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, you need to be able to manage the infrastructure so you know what's up and running.
So who are your main customers for this? And are there a few different segments you target?
We have three major verticals that we go after. There's home, because we believe about 90% of charging sessions will happen in your house if you want an EV. And that assumes that you have a freestanding home. It's a little more complicated when it gets to multifamily. So that's residential. Then we have a huge commercial component to the business, which is everything from workplace, hospitality, healthcare, malls, theaters, you name it. Anywhere where you're driving around town and your car is going to sit for a while, you can top up. And then there's a huge component of the business that's growing very rapidly, which is fleet. So as fleet vehicles are available, 50% of those in North America, for example, are pickup trucks, which was not something I knew 5 years ago when I joined the company. But delivery vans, the Amazons, the DHLs, the FedExes, municipal buses, those things. So we provide the infrastructure, hardware, and software across all three of those verticals.
Mm-hmm. So do you see all of these large vehicles turning electric, pickup trucks, buses, all these areas? Yeah. Eventually they'll move over to electric.
I think so. I don't know if you drive an EV, but I do. Yeah. And the joy of an EV is it's always topped up. You don't have to drive to a gas station. The maintenance is near zero. You know, you have, you know, regenerative braking. So my car is 10 years old. I have a Tesla. It's 10 years old. It still has its original brake pads. Right? Wow. So the cost of ownership ongoing, the cost of fuel is about a fifth to a sixth of either diesel or gas. And so when you look at how compelling that is, as the prices of vehicles come down, as the prices of batteries come down, it's all going to go that way.
I know, maybe, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but people have been saying in cold temperatures, it's harder. The batteries in electric cars, I think they run out a lot quicker, so it's not as useful in those areas. Is that something you foresee changing as well? I imagine, you know, with technology advancing, that'll help. Have you not heard of that before?
No, I've heard that before. No, there's no question. So if you're in colder temperatures, the batteries don't hold up nearly as well. If you drive like I do, which is fast, battery doesn't hold up so well. They'll tell you, you know, you can get my car and it's 250 miles of range, but if you go 80 miles an hour, so what'll happen is the battery capacity will go up, the infrastructure will be more available and distributed, and you won't run into that issue. But there's no question that physics says if you're in northern Norway, you're going to get less range.
Okay. But it will eventually, things will get better and it will be applicable there too. And so I had a question about some of the main competitors like Blink. Are there some areas of differentiation that you think sets yourself apart from these other companies?
Well, you know, it's kind of a Homer answer, but yes, I think there are a lot of differences. And I think the biggest difference is scale. And we also have breadth. So
you're the market leader in North America.
Yeah, if we walk into a customer, we don't say, I'm hoping all you have is nails because I sell hammers, right? So we walk in and go, we can do something that's a simple wall mount all the way to a distributed architecture that can provide you a megawatt of power if you really want that, right? So the sheer product breadth is a huge differentiator between us and anyone else. So we sell you what you need. And if you think about the progression across the portfolio of how expensive stuff is to put in, think it's half the cost is us and half the cost is on the ground, putting it in and improving your infrastructure from a switchgear, power drops, trenching everything else. So we deeply believe that if you go into a customer, what you need to do is say, look, what's your situation? What's your requirement? And we match our portfolio to what you need to keep the cost down. Because if you just said, hey, I'm Tesla and all I sell is superchargers, right? That's a one-trick pony. You don't want to do that, right?
Yeah.
You want to shape the infrastructure for the customer's need. And then on the back end, I mentioned my four favorite words. The last one was reliability. It's got to work. So if you don't have service and support to keep stuff up and running, you're not going to be successful. So those are the big ones. And then the nice thing is also, we're, as we call it, capital light. We don't own the infrastructure, which allows us to be much broader and to support the fundamental service that we provide. We don't have to own and raise a bunch of capital to support it.
So part of your revenue stream is also servicing repairs for the units that you install.
Yes, but it's one step removed. So what we have is our two recurring revenue streams are what we call ChargePoint Cloud, which is everything that links it together, the umbrella software that sees everything and runs a network. Then we have a product we call it Assure, think AppleCare, which is like, look, you know, whatever happens, we'll see it. We'll get it back up and running. We don't make money there. We actually lose money when we fix it, but we make money when we sell the support.
Yeah. Okay. And just talking, we were talking about competitive differentiation. Have you got some long-term strategies about how you maintain a moat or even sort of double down on a moat so you cement your positioning long-term in the market?
I very much think so. So I think you think about ubiquity and accessibility and usability, our reach is significant. And there are a lot of customers who go, well, I don't have just one problem to solve. I have multiple problems to solve, and I'd like for them to be networked in a way that I can manage them seamlessly. So I think that's huge. We have really good relationships with the auto OEMs where we're in their dash. We can do some co-branding stuff with them, et cetera. So we're very, you know, we have a lot of tentacles out in the market. We have a large transaction that we actually announced, which is with Mercedes-Benz. So A, we're in their dash. B, we're at their facilities. My favorite picture is to mention, it has nothing to do with your cold comment before, but we're in the frozen tundra up where one of the racetracks is. And it's like, boom, there's a fast charger, right? So we can fundamentally be their partner across all of their needs as an OEM. We're supporting their dealers. Dealers have been great over the last couple of years. So, you know, the ability to do that and do that reliably, you know, the thing we announced, which is their desire to do fast charge networking across North America, they wouldn't have done that with somebody else who can't back it up. It's one thing to put it in. It's another thing to keep it up. And so that's where I think we are the strongest, both from a reliability of the hardware fundamentally and the ability to deal with it if something goes sideways.
And how fast are chargers getting nowadays? Because at least, because I know some friends, family that have electric cars, at least in the UK, there's still a lot of pretty basic charging units out there. I know they've improved a lot. Where are we at today in terms of, if someone stops with a, you know, typical vehicle, say a Tesla, how long does it take to get a good charge percentage back so they can go off again, you know, and on their way to continue their journey?
So again, if you think about the use cases, 90% of charging happens at home.
Okay.
5 to 7% of charging happens in or around town where you're outside of a business. And there's a very small slice of charging sessions that happen when you're beyond your battery range or in a hurry. And I guess we call it destination charging. It's very rare, we think, that somebody's going to go, I'm going to drive somewhere and sit with my phone for 20 to 30 minutes. So
yeah,
very narrow use case. Power levels there, it's funny. It's really driven by the car more so than it is the infrastructure at this point, because cars can only take it as fast as they'll take it. The batteries will say, hey, not so fast. So, but if we wanted with our infrastructure to hit a car with a megawatt, we could do that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just a question of how much you want to invest.
Yeah.
Think about the ability to put in a substation and hit a car with a lightning bolt. Well, the car wouldn't like that. But you know, getting 75, 80% of a charge in 20 to 30 minutes is entirely realistic.
Yeah. And in terms of where you are in the world, where are your core markets and, well, are you established in most regions in the world, or like geographically, where is ChargePoint at the moment?
So we're very strong in North America, where we started. We've been around for 15 years. Yeah. Probably have 70% or better market share from an AC perspective, which is that 5 to 7 in and around town. We have a really robust home and multifamily business. We also entered Europe 5 years ago. Our market share there is much, much smaller because it's a fragmented market. There are a lot of local players that you have to compete with, but we believe that the long term in Europe is going to be, last I checked, cars are mobile, right? So the ability to drive around Europe and have a single app, single payment infrastructure, be able to roam with other people's infrastructure, which we do, much like a cell phone.
Yep.
So I think we're in really good shape in Europe. And then we're pretty fastidious about not going anywhere else because we want to win in those two geographies first.
And I think you touched on something there, which... So if someone wanted to use your ChargePoint station, do they have to sign up to something first, or do they have to have a special card, or can they just Apple Pay it you know, if they've not been in it before, does it work like that?
Either way, both work.
That's great. Because some of them are quite restrictive in terms of you need to be part of a network, signed up to it, to actually use some of these stations. At least the ones, some of the ones I've seen in Europe, and it's not very friendly sometimes.
Short answer is we're very open. Yeah. Open and easy to use.
That's great. Can you, I suppose it'd be great now as CFO, but dive into some of the financials, as much as you can divulge, maybe some of the growth metrics, things, you know, that have been happening in ChargePoint. You're obviously at a growth stage company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the metrics that are relevant to that, yeah, it would be interesting to know. Price to sales ratio, maybe. I don't know what you have to mind, but maybe just some of the, you know, growth rates of revenue, et cetera.
Yeah, so it's been a bit interesting ride over the last 3 or 4 years because the pandemic messed badly with workplace, which is one of our biggest areas. But fundamentally, from a growth perspective, I mean, I'm gonna round these, just make it easy, like 145, 145, then 250, then 470. And this year, analysts have us, you know, high 600s, low 700s. So growth rate, not a problem. We grew 94% year on year last year. So growth is great. Growth is good, right? From a gross margin perspective, because we had a lot of new products, I mentioned earlier that we think it's important to be able to walk into a customer and say, hey, what's your problem? Then we'll use this part of the toolkit or that part of the toolkit to fix it or address it. So we've had a lot of new product introductions over the last couple of years. So our gross margin took a hit. Also, our mix moved to DC, which is a place that's harder to make money from a hardware perspective. But we've done a really good job, I think, of moving our gross margin up. We went up from 17 to 25% over the last 4 quarters. So yeah. Gross margin is huge. We've held our OpEx flat for 5 quarters consecutively. And so I think we've done a good job there, and we have a path to profitability. So, you know, in the end, it's all about making money. And so one of the things I said a year ago was I'd like to make money on everything we sell, even the newest product, right? With the toughest price point. And we've crossed over on that. So those are the big ones. The other ones are, if you think about the way our business works, and this is the importance of software, if you have a networked charging infrastructure, how many different types of management software do you want to manage not only the infrastructure, but also power, access, pricing, the whole nine yards? Mm-hmm. You really want one, right? So the whole land and expand thing is huge. So we've got a really nice slice of the, if you look in the US, for example, the Fortune 50, the Fortune 500, you know, we're north of 50% on both. And these people keep coming back. So about 60% of our business is rebuy. So that's how we structured the business, and that's how we measure it.
You said you had 70% market share in North America.
That's on the AC commercial front.
Okay. So, but you are, yeah, the market leader in many of these different verticals.
Yeah, we're top three on fast charge. We're in the top four in home. Home's a consumer product that you can imagine. But yeah, we're extremely well-placed in North America. And we think, if you think about the European market, there needs to be someone who can basically cross borders. And I think we're the only ones who can do that.
We hope you're enjoying the episode. For interviews like this every Thursday, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, make sure you give us a star rating and leave guest suggestions along with any other feedback in the review section. Now, back to the show.
So could we touch on what you anticipate to be the main growth drivers over the next 12 to 18 months? Are there a few areas that you sort of think are going to drive the growth rate forward?
Sure. So our business is 100% driven by vehicles. If we have a chart in our investor deck that I won't take credit for, even though I should, it literally says the adoption of passenger vehicles in North America, for example, and our revenue, and they correlate beautifully. Right?
The EV market. So you're just tracking
EV,
with that.
EV passenger cars directly drive our business. So if that slows down, we readily admit we'll slow down. Yeah. If that accelerates, we'll go with it. The other big one is, from a fleet perspective, the manufacturers are having serious trouble getting vehicles out there. So the one place they've done well is in the municipal electric bus market. That's actually going quite well for the municipalities, and we participate beautifully in that. You know, if you look at pickup trucks, for example, I'm on the sidelines going, you know, go Ford Lightning. They just need to get the vehicles out there. And then I think the hole that we're most anxious about is medium-sized, think delivery vans and box trucks kinds of things. That's a huge driver for us. So as go vehicles, so go so goes our company. So that's the biggest drivers there. Doesn't hurt to have tailwinds from a government policy perspective, governments putting in incentives, those sorts of things. But the number one driver is vehicles.
And so how big, in terms of percentage share, how big do you think the EV market can get? How much will be EV in the future versus gas?
We'd all argue about how long it will take, but it's going to end up being 100-0.
Yeah. And then so looking forward, what sort of phase are we at on that growth trajectory? Do you know how much is it sort of in the market today? How much EV in America, North America?
2-3%.
Is that it? Wow.
Yeah. In Europe, it's 5-7%. You get a place like Norway, which is really high.
Yeah.
Norway's a very small country and they have a lot of control over who does what. By the way, they use that control beautifully. Thank you and EVs. But yeah, but we had a long way to go. So what has to happen if you think about this as an arc? So you have governments declaring, here's our policy. People are warming up to the idea of you can charge wherever you are. Cars sit still 95% of the time. Right. So you've got all these sort of tailwind type things that take a while. But then you also have a fleet out there in the US. There's 200, I don't know the actual number. I think it's 250 to 270 million vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, if I bought a car 6 years ago, I'm not going to trash it just because I want an EV. So you have this turnover thing that has to happen gradually. So I think it's a 15 to 30 year transition.
Yeah, I've got you.
Where you get to 100-0.
And the main driver for this is, like you said, reliability of the cars, lower cost to run, and lower cost on fuel.
Yeah. By the way, and nobody ever talks about this, but I'll just throw it out there. EVs are fast.
No, yeah, I know.
They're really fast. But that's just me.
No, they're crazy fast. I think they're basically getting supercar 0-60. Well, we do 0-60 here, miles per hour. I don't know what you, is it 0-100 kilometers per hour you do that? Oh, no, you do miles per hour too.
We do miles per hour.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So 0-60, 3 seconds was like the best supercars were getting that. And then now you're getting this in quite a few electric cars.
I have a 9-year-old Tesla and it's 3.4.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And by the way, it weighs as much as a dump truck, right? It's one of the first 30,000 cars, but it's just blindingly fast.
Do they just, will they be 1 second 0-60 in the future? Are they just going to keep getting faster? Or is there just like...
You're going to run into other limitations.
Okay, okay.
Rubber being the biggest one.
Right. it's incredible though. It's such a dramatic change.
By the way, not to get you off topic, but one of the other things that's amazing about electric cars, because the batteries are the major weight, you distribute them in the car. So if you look at a Porsche, the goal is to get a 50-50 weight distribution. And you can do that with every EV alive. It's like, well, I'll just put the batteries here and get the right weight distribution for stability.
Yeah. Okay, okay. I understand. That's great. And so what's ChargePoint strategy towards profitability? Have you got a target in mind in terms of the year or what you need to get to?
I told my kids I would never get a tattoo, but I do have a tattoo across my chest that says we will be profitable at the end of next year. So we've been really clear with the street. Really clear with our board, really clear with our employees. We need to be positive by the end of next calendar year.
Calendar year.
I just use calendar because we're very calendar. The other thing we said is we have a measure we publish called adjusted EBITDA, which is basically EBITDA taking out space comp. There's some other bits that we take out that are very minor. And we had our EBITDA loss in Q1, we're finishing our Q2, but we've said we'll cut that by 2/3 by the fourth quarter of this year. That's our target. And I go, that's just a massive move in the right direction. So if you ask anybody in my company, what's the number one goal of the company? It's that.
And so in the future, would it be the home point that could be the biggest growth area in terms of your charging stations? Because at what point have you like mapped out the sort of commercial area, or is there a huge untouched area for that?
So I'll go super fast for a second. So home, $700, commercial AC per port, commercial AC, call it 2,500 to 3,000. A DC port can be 30,000. That's just us, by the way. And then some of our modular architecture is a question of what do you need? And the pieces cost what they cost, but the price per port is probably maybe a little less than $30,000, right? So when you think about those components and then you get to ports, you go, well, where's the revenue come from, right? So our business is broken down. 10 to 12% is residential. been super consistent over the last several years. Commercial, either side of 70%, and fleet's the balance. I see fleet being, which is a combination of AC and DC, you know, level two charging and fast charging. I see that becoming a massive growth driver for the company. Mm-hmm. So if I had my druthers, home would be consistent in its percentage because it's a low ASP product and it's tied directly to vehicles. People buy one within the first 6 months of buying the car. Commercial, we need people to get back to work, but there are a lot of other applications that I think are very strong. And then when fleet cuts in, life is good.
Yeah. What's your viewpoint on work from home? Where do you think that's going? Do you think we've hit like an equilibrium now? Where,
no, I think it's going to gradually trend back to work.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we are 100% back in now from...
Oh, wow. Sunday. Okay.
Yeah.
What city are you in?
London. London.
In London. Okay. So in London. Yeah, great. So I think it's going to trend back to work because I have my personal views. I think it's more effective when you're there. But I think it's going to be, and I said this 2 years ago, hopefully I'll be right, it will probably take a 10 to 15% hit in total time at work, but it's not going to be 60%. There'll be a little bit more work from home, but in the end, we're going to get back to the office.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like we are now one of the first to do this, at least it feels like. There's been mixed viewpoints on it and how it's happening, but I do see the benefits of doing it. There's much better collaboration in the office, I think, especially if you're invested in something together as a team.
And by the way, it's better for you personally, I think. If you could compartmentalize, like, hey, I'm going to work now and then I'll come home. The blending of work and home, I think, is a challenge. Yeah. By the way, would you blend home at work?
No.
It doesn't work the other way either.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a recent development recently. Rivian, Ford, GM joining Tesla's supercharger network. Blink and ChargePoint offering chargers with Tesla's connector as well. That was a development, I believe, unless I'm wrong. What are the implications of this move for ChargePoint? What's the, you know, are there any other changes you foresee going forward?
Yeah, so I'm going to speak for me here because I feel very strongly about this. I think the world is missing the mark on this one. I just went to a wedding of all places, Belgrade, and realized that I forgot to bring an adapter, right? I had the wrong plug. But what happens behind the plug doesn't change based on the plug.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the Tesla thing is, and by the way, 70% of the charges on our network are Teslas. So it isn't like we don't do Tesla, right? We charge everything, right? So we're like delighted. Whenever Teslas want to show up, we'll charge them, right?
Yep.
Connector thing is much ado about nothing. We would be delighted if somebody decided to go with a single connector. So in Europe,
the universal connector, that was something that exists,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. In Europe, it's all CCS, right? So it's not the Tesla plug that I have outside charging my car as I stand here today because you charge at home. It's CCS. If North America went all Tesla or all CCS, Chatmo's dead, pretty much, we'd be delighted. But the plug is just a plug. It's just an adapter, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We think this is a bunch of noise. And then if you think about the supercharger network, remember what I said earlier, which is you think about where do the charging sessions happen? Right. So the infrastructure needs to be everywhere and you need to be able to assess it. Part of that is, can you plug into it? So if we got to a world where Tesla has their supercharger network for the 2 to 3 to 4% of charging sessions that happen when you're willing to drive behind a Walmart and sit next to the dumpster and charge your car, great, have that. But when you really want it to be ubiquitous, convenient, et cetera, please God, pick a connector. And that's the infrastructure we're going to provide.
Yeah.
We want to be everywhere.
And what does the future look like for ChargePoint? Have you got anything you can divulge related to innovations or areas of interest outside of your normal operations?
You know, it's funny. We've always been the person who shows up to a buffet with a really big appetite and we load our plate up, right? So we have a lot of things going and it's everything from hardware across our three verticals, right? Software to support everything that we do. I mean, just to give you an example of something that's super complicated, how would you manage power and accounts and payments in a condominium building, right? Where you light up the parking lot, but you need shared access, right?
Yeah.
And then we're in Dash. So we do so many things, the payment infrastructure, that we support, and then you got to roam with it across Europe. So we've got an enormous number of things that we're doing that would eclipse any other player in the space. If you take somebody like an ABB, they don't even have a software business, right?
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is to get to, it's easy for drivers. They have a great experience. They can find it. They can use it. It always works. The payment infrastructures work. We support fleets. We support leasing companies where you want to get reimbursed at home. All these are the things. So we have an enormously full plate because we see the endpoint being a easy to use for drivers, easy to use for hosts, easy to use from a payment infrastructure standpoint, where it just all works and it's seamless. And so in terms of doing something new, I would say not likely to do something groundbreaking new, but if we do what we currently have on our plate well, there's nobody else. I asked this question yesterday of somebody. I go, if not ChargePoint, who?
Yeah. Good place to be in.
Well, yeah. But we got to do it. Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do, but we...
Yeah.
So one of the people I most respect on the planet is our CEO, Pasquale Romano. And if there's anybody better at 5 to 10 years out, I've never met that person, right? And so if we can just execute against that roadmap, life is good.
And last question, just before we wrap up. So if EVs are on their growth trajectory in the moment, say for the next 20 years or something, when do you think is going to be the fastest acceleration of that growth? Is it going to be the next 2 years or is it going to be in a couple of years' time? When is that sort of mass market? Because if you're saying there's only 2 to 3 market penetration at the moment, at some point you're going to get a dramatic shift. When do you foresee that?
So I think there's some, it's going to be a little bit jolty.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So when I joined the company 5 years ago, the mantra was, you know, in a couple of years, and then a year goes by and you go, you know, in a couple of years, right? And it was all about getting the cars. I think most people would agree. If you look at, I mean, just set of Super Bowl ads, right? Everybody is, all the auto OEMs are jumping onto the EV bandwagon and creating cars. So having basic availability is a huge inflection point for the industry. Second thing is people need to buy them. You know, economic forces at the moment, macroeconomic forces are not as favorable for that as they should be. But I think this is a huge hump that we've gotten over. And then I think what you'll see in another, talking passenger, by the way, what you'll see in another 2 or 3 years is people are going to go, well, hang on a second. If I buy a gas-powered car or a diesel-powered car now, and I need to sell it 3 to 5 to 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, however long you hold your car, it ain't going to be worth anything. When that seeps into the consciousness, people are going to go, well, I don't want to buy that car anymore. So I think it's going to charge up. Sorry about the phrase, but I think it's going to charge up hard in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And obviously, there's going to be developments with the larger vehicles as well. And
yeah, on the fleet side, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And so, and trucks, things like this. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, the like the 18-wheeler thing.
Yeah,
I think that's going to take a while.
Yeah, okay.
But the box trucks, and pickup trucks, like the real baseline of sort of middle mile, last mile.
Buses already going over. Yeah,
buses are going hard, right?
Yeah.
And things like yard tractors and stuff that you drive around in the warehouse, those are going pretty hard too. But I think middle mile, last mile are going to go fast, and I think long haul is going to take,
Well, Rex, it's been great to chat. Thank you so much for giving so much insight into ChargePoint. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Just thank you for allowing me to talk about a company I deeply believe in. I think what we're doing is great. And this is my last job. it's just such a fun space. You know, you work with utilities, governments, auto OEMs. You know, we get to work with everybody. It is the most fun space I can imagine. And when you look at the economics of it for the people on the other side, it's just a no-brainer. We got to go electric.
Yeah, no, definitely makes sense to me as well. Where can people keep up to date with developments from ChargePoint? Is it all on the website somewhere?
Obviously, chargepoint.com.
Yep.
And we have a bunch of people who load up places like LinkedIn. We clearly have a social media presence as well. And you know, we have an IR group. Anybody who wants can contact me directly.
Awesome. We'll put some links in the show notes so people got access to
that. That sounds great.
Great. Thanks, Rex. Have a great day.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Just a quick note before we sign off. If you're looking for an easily digestible daily update on the markets, this might be of interest. Opto Updates is our short newsletter sent every day during the trading week, giving you a bulleted list of the top 7 stories from the global stock markets. We've done the hard work for you, highlighting relevant opportunities and trends. And in addition, we'll also keep you notified of any new products, stock reports, or webinars from the Opto world. If you're interested, sign up using the link in the show notes. And thanks also to CoFruition for consulting on and producing the show. Until next time.
CoFruition.